It's Stuck Mike in the studio at AirVenture Oshkosh 2016, and we're talking with Dr. Janet Cavandi, who's the director of NASA's Glenn Research Center in Ohio. Janet, thank you so much for coming by to talk with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
You have had a busy schedule at AirVenture Oshkosh 2016, a number of forums and other presentations, and of course NASA has a significant presence here as well this week. This is also the 75th anniversary of the Glenn Research Center.
That's true.
Tell me what special things are happening this year.
Well, in celebration, we've been having some open houses. We hadn't had an open house in about 8 years, so we were flocked with visitors. We had about 25,000 people to the center on two different events. We have two campuses, so we split them up, and one is right at the Cleveland Airport, and that's our Lewis Field location, and we have one out in Plumbrook Station, which is in Sandusky, Ohio, where we do our experimental environmental test capabilities out there.
Now, one thing I forgot to mention as you were introduced was that you're a former shuttle astronaut.
True.
And so that's been an interesting probably centerpiece in your career. Talk about the things that you did sort of before, during, and after your time flying the three shuttle missions that you were a part of.
Okay, well, yeah, I started my career pretty much at a company that made batteries for spacecraft. It's called Eagle Pitcher Industries. I had a master's degree at the time in chemistry. I was hired by Boeing Aerospace, and they were kind enough to allow me to go back to school, and I got a PhD at the University of Washington in pressure indicating paint. It was part of the chemistry department, and I did some of my demonstration work at NASA Ames. I was then able to apply for the astronaut program and was accepted in 1995 and started in the 1995 class. And then I was very fortunate to be able to fly three shuttle missions.
So at what point in your early part of your educational career did you decide you wanted to be an astronaut?
Prior to my educational career.
Oh, yeah? How old?
Probably 4 or 5 years old. My dad was an aviator, and he was a great admirer of the stars, and we had a house in the country, and you could see the stars really bright at night, and so we would sit in the back porch and we'd talk about the first space people, the first astronauts, and what it would be like to be up there and looking down at us, and what would we see, and I think that sort of planted that seed, and then I decided that's what I wanted to do, especially when they started taking women and non-military pilots. I thought I might have an opportunity to apply and maybe get in, and I was fortunate enough to do that.
When did you learn how to fly an airplane?
Well, my husband is a pilot as well. He's a pilot for Delta Airlines, and he actually was a flight instructor at Boeing as well. So we both worked there, and he taught me how to fly initially. But I had just soloed before I was accepted at NASA. So my next airplane was a T-38. So I went from a relatively slow aircraft to a capable of going supersonic aircraft. So things sped up quickly, and I had some great instructors there in the form of my classmates, and NASA has great flight instructors. So then I now have about 1,200 hours in a T-38.
And are you counting the however many hundred hours in orbit as part of that 1,200?
No, I'm not counting that.
Can't do that?
That's a separate number of hours. I have about let's see, how many days? Probably about a month or so total in space, a little over that, 33 days, I believe, in space.
Right, yeah, your bio says that. And then there's the 13.1 million miles.
Yeah.
And 535 orbits.
Is that the frequent flyer miles counted, when you get on an airplane, but it doesn't, unfortunately.
So you wanted to be an astronaut from a very early age, and then you took this path through for pretty deep science, right?
Yeah, my specialty was chemistry, especially analytical chemistry. But, when you get into this field, you really go into physics as well. Chemistry and physics is very much interrelated, especially down into the quantum levels. And then I've always worked as an engineer. My title, throughout my career was engineer. So I have worked mostly with engineers. So I think I'm fairly well fluent in engineer and science, and which is fortunate now because at the Glenn Research Center, where you have a lot of scientists, since it is a research center, And we have also a lot of engineers, like I mentioned. So sometimes being able to translate science to engineering and air engineering to science is needed. More scientist to engineer than and engineer to scientist than the science and engineering. Sometimes there's a different mindset when people are designing something than when people are discovering things.
Right. So what was it that sort of drew you into the Glenn Research Center?
Well, I was offered the position. I had been the director of flight crew operations at the NASA Johnson Space Center. That directorate was merged with Mission Operations Directorate. For a short while, I was deputy director of the Health and Human Performance Directorate at Johnson, and the director at the John Glenn Research Center called and asked me if I'd be interested in being his deputy. So I went up on probably the coldest day of the year in Cleveland, which was minus 15 for that year. And it was a great center with a great leader, and I just thought it would be a really nice opportunity. So that's what took me to Cleveland.
Now, a portion of the work that the Glenn Research Center does is aeronautically focused. Could you talk through some of the aeronautical research that's going on there now?
Right. So we have a lot of different wind tunnels from subsonic through transonic, supersonic, and even hypersonic capabilities. So the specialty, I would say, at Glenn is the icing research. It started out as an icing research center back in the World War II timeframe. And so they have the capability of creating any size droplets we need, and they will freeze as they come out, and then they will adhere to whatever structure is in the wind tunnel section. So we test wings, we test fuselages, we test actual operating engines, and we have demonstrated that prior to previous beliefs where this wouldn't happen, you can actually get ice to freeze inside an operating engine and then chunks break off and cause the engine to seize, which may help explain some previously unexplained disasters where planes have come out of the sky for otherwise unexplained reasons. So engine developers test there a lot. All the primary engine developers test there and are very interested in this capability.
How do those research findings get played out in products and in industry?
Yeah, that's very interesting. So say we have one engine developer will test a new blade design, a turbine design, a compressor design. We hold that proprietary to that company, and then they design and develop and perfect it, and then they go off and build that in their product. We may have a competitor testing in another wind tunnel or a different section, and they're developing their own, you know, maybe material for their engine component, and so we'll help them develop that, and that's also proprietary to their company. So we're able to develop different products for different companies and keep it all separate that way. We also do a lot of work with the DoD, and we have specialized tunnels that we can close off and keep everyone else out that doesn't need to be there, and they're able to test proprietary information in there, DoD sensitive type information in there. So we can keep everything compartmentalized. People have need to know, they do what they do, and then that's used either commercially or by the DoD.
So those are cases where your investigator is either a commercial entity or another agency. Mm-hmm. What about original exploratory research?
Yeah, we have a lot of TRL, the test readiness level 0, 1, 2, 3 level work as well. So that's the very beginning of initial design work. We have that in space as well as aviation. We're split about half and half between space and aviation. So, for instance, we're developing the electric propulsion systems for spacecraft that will go out. Once you've got the smoke and flames and you get whatever it is off the planet, once you're in orbit and you want to go into deeper space, you need a different type of propulsion system. So electric propulsion is that. And so we have engineers that design from the basic concepts of propulsion and materials that will withstand temperatures and pressures of other planets. The same materials that will withstand the pressure and heat of Venus will also work inside an engine that's operating. So the corrosion and the things that make sensors fail in a typical hot location, we develop those that won't fail in those kinds of operating environments.
Been talking with Dr. Janet Cavandi, who's a former shuttle astronaut and the director of the Glenn Research Center in Northern Ohio. Thinking back to your shuttle career, what stands out as maybe one or two of the most impactful things that you did as an astronaut?
I think the second mission I flew on was STS-99. It was the it was a mission where we mapped the entire Earth in three dimensions. That probably had the most impact to people on Earth because Google Maps actually uses that information. So if you tap on your phone, you use that to guide you maybe to an air show. A lot of that data came from that mission. There's a lot of science that we've done on several of the missions. I guess another one that I feel strongly about is called the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer. And it's on the space station now, but I flew it on my first flight as a demonstration capability. And it measures cosmic particles in space. So it's basic physics research. So if we talk about basic research, it has a big magnet and a mass detector. So it can tell the charge and the mass of any particle that enters it. So the principal investigators are looking for materials that are tiny particles that have never been seen before, predicted to be seen in space, but may have not been seen in space. So, of course, when you're looking at one thing in research, sometimes you find other things. So they've been very pleased to find all kinds of information about cosmic particles. I don't know that they've ever found antimatter yet, but that was one of the things that they were looking for, as well as the composition of dark matter in space.
So plenty of interesting things happening both where there's air and where there's not. Mm-hmm. And the research center that you head is in the middle of a lot of that stuff.
That's
Dr.
Right.
Janet Cavandi, the Center Director of NASA's Glenn Research Center in Ohio, thanks for visiting with us at AirVenture 2016.
Been a pleasure. Thank you.
For EAA Radio, I'm Stuck Mike.